Okay, let's open our Bibles to Psalm 52. Psalm 52. And put your finger there once you've found Psalm 52. And let's go back to 1 Samuel 21. So Psalm 52, got your finger there, or marker there, a piece of paper. And then we're going to go back to 1 Samuel 21. Again, we're talking about a psalm that deals with David when he was fleeing from Saul and he's at the tabernacle and Doeg the Edomite saw him. And so we were reminding ourselves the context of this. And when you put this in here, it's really Doeg is an ominous. There we go. Thank you. Yes, that didn't sound right. Ominous. There we go. Ominous. Whew, okay. Ominous creature that he really did a lot of damage here. And I can't imagine meeting a person like him. And then David presents this to the nation of Israel to sing. And the purpose of this, David wants all of Israel to remember not only what happened, but how to respond when something like this happens. In fact, it allows us, through the wisdom of the Holy Spirit, to interpret our circumstances. Two people can go through the same set of circumstances. One person can be devastated. Another person says, God is going to do something powerful in this situation. It's just, it's how we interpret the circumstances. And so we're back in 1 Samuel 21, and we're reading the story of this. Verses 1 through 9, we have David coming let me just summarize this. David flees to Ahimelech, the priest, and he says, is there any food here? And he said, well, just the showbread. And he said, well, let me have some of that. And he worked through that. He said, is there a weapon here? And he said, well, just Goliath's sword. Now, it seems like in my mind, it makes sense that this was probably a smaller dagger-like sword that Goliath had. Maybe he had a spear, of course, we know that. Maybe he had a longer weapon, but here is a dagger that probably was about David's size. That's what it seems to make sense. Probably the sword he cut Goliath's head off with back when we read of David and Goliath here. But so he gives him that sword, and then he flees, and then Doeg is watching. So we get down to chapter 22, and let's look in verse 6. When Saul heard that David was discovered, the men that were with him now, Saul abode in Gibeah under a tree in Ramah, having a spear in his hand, and all his servants were standing about him. Then Saul said unto his servants that stood about him, hear now, ye Benjamites, will the son of Jesse give every one of you fields and vineyards and make you all captains of thousands and captains of hundreds? He's kind of saying, he's not the guy that's going to reward you. I'm the one that's going to reward you, or I can reward you. Don't forget, I can reward you. Now, that's an interesting motivation there. Verse 8, that all of you have conspired against me. He's dealing with, I believe, paranoia here. The world is closing in on him. He's suspicious of everybody and everything. And there is none that showeth me that my son hath made a league. So my son's turned against me. None of you told me. You've all hid it from me. And that my son hath made a league with the son of Jesse. And there is none of you that is sorry for me. Now, that seems strange. Does that little phrase strike you as odd? I'm the king. I can promote you. And there's treachery going on. And nobody feels sorry for me. I mean, it's like, that seems strange in there. But again, he's saying, I'm going through a tough time. Don't you empathize with me? And just, it seems strange for a king. I was just thinking the other day, one of the most, I don't know, I don't want to put a superlative with it. One of the great characteristics of a leader is self-sacrificing. Would you agree with that? If you're under the authority of a leader who is a megalomaniac and it's all about him and he wants stuff for him and, oh, you know, he's just feeling so bad, that's a bad sign. It's a bad sign. So here, that seems strange to me, that no one's sorry for me. I can hear him like a little tear drip down or something. Or showeth unto me that my son has stirred up my servant against me to lie in wait this day. Now, again, now his son is the one that's stirring David up. I mean, now his son is the evil person that's making David do this. So now, verse 9, then answered Doeg the Edomite, which was set over the servants of Saul, and said, I saw the son of Jesse coming to Nob, to Ahimelech the son of Ahitub, and he inquired of the Lord for him, and gave him victuals, and gave him the sword of Goliath the Philistine. Now, I don't think I'm reading into this much to say, what was Doeg's motivation here? King Saul says, remember guys, I'm the one that can promote you, and why are all of you against me? And Doeg's, pick me, pick me, pick me. I saw something. What was his motivation? Reward. Advancement. Promotion. And I think this plays out, not only in the story, but also in the psalm here. So Doeg, he is the guy that comes to the front of the crowd. In verse 11, then the king sent to call Ahimelech the priest, the son of Ahitub, and all his father's house, the priests that were in Nob. And they came, all of them, to the king. And Saul said, hear now, thou son of Ahitub. And he answered, here I am, my lord. And Saul said unto him, why have ye conspired against me, thou and the son of Jesse, in that thou hast given him bread and a sword and hast inquired of God for him? He should rise against me to lie in wait at his day. Then Ahimelech answered the king and said, and who is so faithful among all thy servants as David? Is that not true? He's a national hero. Which is the king's son-in-law? That's true, and goeth at thy bidding, and is honorable in thine house. Did I then begin to inquire of God for him? I understand. I mean, I have continued. I didn't just start inquiring for him. I've been doing this. This is my normal job. Be it far from me. Let not the king impute anything unto his servant, nor to all the house of my father, for thy servant knew nothing of all this, less or more. Now, he's saying, listen, we were not conspiring against you. I'm just doing my normal job, so please don't think I knew anything here. And then verse 16, the king said, thou shalt surely die, Ahimelech, thou and all thy father's house. Now that seems strange, doesn't it? That is very harsh. And again, I think the court was used to Paul's ranting and raving. He'd already thrown some javelins at David. Remember that? I don't know if I'd ever stay in a job where my boss fired a gun at me, or even, you know, threw a spear at me. I don't even if they threw a mug at me. I mean, I think in the military you can't leave, right? If you have a crazy commander, I guess. But in a job, wouldn't we be gone? Like the first. Now the king is different. You know, he's the king. But here, these people are used to these outbursts. Okay, so you got to die for this, and everyone else is thinking, wow, this here goes King Saul again. And verse 17, the king said unto the footmen that stood about him, turn and slay the priest of the Lord, because their hand also is with David, and because they knew when he fled, and did not show it unto it to me. And look at this next phrase. But the servants of the king would not put forth their hand to fall upon the priest of the Lord. Why do you think they said, I'm not going to do that? They don't want to face God's wrath. Can you say it in different words, maybe, or maybe a different idea? Oh, you scratch your head. Okay, anybody else have an idea? Why would they not? They're disobeying the king. Yes? Okay, you're kind of getting in that same idea, Joel? William over here? This name's William. William, Joel. Joel, William. Okay. Okay, anybody else have an idea? They were processing this. There was something. Would you agree that they had a moral authority higher than King Saul? Isn't that interesting? He is the king of the land, but when he said to do something, there's something that said, that's not right. That's not right. There's something greater. Now, I was thinking about this. There are times when governments think they are the supreme authority, and whatever they say should be what everybody does, and they don't recognize a higher authority. Can we understand from history and from some totalitarian governments that have that idea? About last year. Yes. Now, it's interesting. Now, Jonathan's implicated in this too, right? Have you heard his name come up a couple times? Jonathan was still filtering his father's action through God's moral perspective. And it's amazing how whatever we do, and the governments, they don't like that. But we say, that's not right. Well, who's to determine right? Who's to determine wrong? That's an interesting question to talk about. You know, I've played around this idea. Why in the world do totalitarian governments want to persecute Christians? You ever thought about that? They should be the most joyful, loving, kind, peaceable, law-abiding people, unless it contradicts God. They're the salt of the earth. Why in the world do they want to persecute Christians? Yes. You're getting ready to say, I can see the wheels turning. Yes.
It contradicts everything they stand for, because all authority stops with the totalitarian government. Yeah. All authority, yeah. All wisdom, all knowledge, all permission.
Yeah.
And Christianity is absolutely opposed to that.
It really bugs them when they say this is the way, this is morality. And we say, I'm sorry, that's not what the Bible says, not what God says. It bugs them. It really irritates them. So here is an example of a supreme authority that doesn't acknowledge, Saul, he thinks he's a supreme authority. And so Saul's unheeded command, they did not obey. I think these men here in verse 17, they feared God more than the king. I think that's really the case. But look at Doeg. That's not the case with Doeg. Look at verse 18. The king said to Doeg, "Turn thou and fall upon the priest." Now, if he'd said, "No way, king," he's in line with everybody else. He could have said, "I'm not going to do that," and he would have blended in with everybody else. Would you agree to that? But the king says, "Okay, Doeg, you do it." And Doeg says, "Oh, I'd be glad to do that." And Doeg the Edomite turned, and he fell upon the priest. And he slew on that day 80, what's that number, 80? 80, and 5 persons that did wear the linen ephod. Can you imagine, I mean, there are times when there has to be an execution or something, but can you imagine killing 85 people? And he may not have done it single-handedly. He's a guy in authority. He had other people working for him. But 85 people, he didn't stop there. Look at verse 19. And Nob, the city of the priest, smote he with the edge of the sword, both men and women, children and sucklings. What's the difference between a child and a suckling? Child may be walking around 7, 8 years old. Child, suckling, they're still a baby. They can't even walk yet. Can you imagine killing women? I mean, walking through a village and killing women, then killing the children? This shocks our conscience. And then killing babies. I mean, this is shocking. And he went on and killed the oxen and the asses and the sheep with the edge of the sword. And so there's only one escape in verse 20. Now, this is the man that did this. Now, how in the world? What was Doeg's motivation? It was, again, pleasing the power that was closest to him. He was more concerned about Saul being pleased than with God being pleased. What a man. What a man. Now, let's go back to Psalm 52. That's our context here. Yes, sir. Yes. Right. They were wild. Yeah. Well, the Edomites have been exterminated, I think. Is that true? They've all been wiped out, and there was a prophecy there. So I don't think there's any Edomites left today. But yes, you're right. There's an ethnic issue in this thing where he was very happy to do that. Now look at Psalm 52. In that context, we have David, when he comes as a king, he says, this psalm's got to be out there. I want people, when we are facing somebody who is under a totalitarian government and is wreaking havoc on God's people, we need to understand how to process this. Look at first of all, we see in verses 1-4, here's the evil man described. I want to go through quickly. I want to finish this. 15, the evil man described, verses 1-4, why boastest thou thyself in mischief, O mighty man? The goodness of God endureth continually. Thy tongue deviseth mischiefs. like a sharp razor working deceitfully. Thou lovest evil more than good, and lying rather than to speak righteousness. Selah, thou lovest all devouring words, O thou deceitful tongue. Here's the evil man described. He's boasting in mischief. The English word mischief, now this is not like, now we talk about, okay, yeah, you know, we were having a lot of fun at VBS, and there was a couple kids that were doing some mischievous things, but other than that, it was fun. We kind of think of that as lighthearted. They broke a couple rules. It's not a big deal. That's not what we're talking about here. This word here in our Bibles means intentional injury, harm or damage done by design. Now, that's pretty serious. We deal with accidents all the time, right? I was sharing with, I think, the Sunday school class Sunday. We were talking about road rage. There was a lady that almost came about this close to running into our minivan while I was driving with the boys in car seats behind there. All four of us are there. She was doing it purposefully. And we thought, this lady is, she wants to help, wants us to wreck. Now, that's a scary thing. Accidents happen, but there are times that people do things on purpose. And that's tough to take. This is the word mischief. Why boastest thou thyself in mischief? Oh, mighty man, he's saying, yeah, I think that's kind of a sarcastic. You think you're a mighty man, huh? And then comparing there, look at this contrast between the mischief of this boaster to what? The goodness of God. You know what that tells me? God will never do something to injure or damage us on purpose. That's God's goodness. The symmetrical balance in the Psalms here. Here is the boaster that's involved with intentional harm, and here's the goodness of God contrasted there. This word is chesed, loyal, steadfast love. God would never treat his own as Doeg treated the priest. God is good and faithful and loyal. There's such a contrast in that first verse. Here is the evil, and here is God. What a shining contrast. And then it says he loves evil more than good. Why would he do that? Why would he love evil more than good?
More pleasing to the flesh.
Okay. More pleasing to the flesh. Yes?
Sin nature.
Sin nature. Yeah, I put down. It's more fun. Now, it was so funny. I remember talking to some senior citizens in a nursing home years ago, and I said, are you folks behaving yourself? And they said, now, where's the fun in that? So it's the idea, you know. Now, that's, you know, that we can joke about that. But, in you know, sometimes the world's presented as a lot of fun, and we're Christians. We can't do all the fun stuff. That's not true. But he loves the evil. Yes? Okay. Yeah. Why did you do this? Because I could. You know, the power. I was able to do it. Sometimes it pays more. Would you agree with that? Doing evil pays more, and it gets me man's approval. Here we go. That's Doeg's case. He was doing evil, but it got Saul's approval. And then it says the next part, he loves lying more than righteousness. Why would somebody lie? Well, it benefits him. The truth can get me into trouble sometimes, right? Tell me the truth. You're like, oh, no, I don't want to tell the truth. He loves lying more than righteousness. Here's a man, Doeg, that has no morals. He'll do anything, step on anybody, destroy, hurt, or kill anyone that gets in his way. He has no regard for God or his people. The only thing that he lives for is the now, and the only thing he respects is the power that can promote him. Does that sound like politicians? That's a scary thought, isn't it? They're living for the power that's in their life that can give them a promotion. Then it goes on to say, he loves devouring words. It literally means to gulp. We have a phrase in our language. I'll eat you for lunch. You ever heard that phrase? You know, sometimes you're talking, you know, trash on the basketball court. I'm gonna eat you for lunch. You know, I didn't know what that meant as a kid. Like, you're gonna do what? It didn't make sense to me. Here's another one. I'll eat you up and spit you out. You heard that phrase before? It's the idea of devouring. There are people who thrive at going around getting the dirt on someone. Just, I'm going to ruin your reputation. I'm coming after you. And they find out all the secrets and make it as public as possible. Now, I want to give you a saying here, and you tell me if this is true or not. We heard this phrase, we tell it to kids, sticks and stones may hurt my bones, but words will never hurt me. Is that true?
No.
Words can do a lot of damage. So here is a man that is pouring out his venom, his words. It's amazing. Now, we read about a sword doing all this. Look at these words that's doing this. Can we read in verse 2 that Doeg knew exactly what he was doing? He was harming David intentionally. He knew what he was doing there. But look at verse 6. The righteous man described, it's encouraging. The righteous also shall see and fear and shall laugh at him. Now, this is encouraging because the righteous will see his downfall. Now, it says the righteous also shall see and fear. What's this fear? Whom are they fearing? Who are they fearing? How do we say that? Whichever. They're fearing. They are fearing whom? They're fearing God, are they not? When they see the wicked brought to judgment, they're going to say, our God is a righteous God. He's a holy God. And they're going to fear God. And then it says they're going to laugh. Why are they laughing? Why are they laughing? You got an answer for that?
Because they know what God's going to do to them, how he's going to punish them, so that he will avenge his people.
Okay, so they're laughing at their downfall, is what you're saying? Yes, sir? These are the righteous that'll be laughing, okay? So why are they laughing? Yes. Is this somebody that comes by and insults you and you're like, that wasn't nice, that was me, and they're walking away and they trip and fall and they break their arm. And you go, ha, 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 look at you. God just got you. Is that the type of laughing that we're talking about?
Yeah.
Okay, hold that thought, okay? Let's read a couple of verses here. Let's all go to Psalm 64, verses 9 and 10. Psalm 64. Why are they laughing and what is this? Yeah, God zapped you good, right? James and John, the sons of thunder mindset, you know, calling fire down from heaven. And when that happens, they're going to laugh. Psalm 64, verses 9 and 10. It says, and all men shall fear. Here we go, there's that fear. And shall declare the work of God, for they shall wisely consider of his doing. The righteous shall be glad in the Lord and shall trust in him, and all the upright in heart shall glory. Notice there's the gladness, the laughter, and the fearing that's involved with that. Okay, another passage, Proverbs 1:26. Proverbs 1:26. I'm going to read it as soon as I get there. Proverbs 1:26. I also will laugh at your calamity. I will mock when your fear cometh. Here is God laughing at the ungodly. But are believers supposed to laugh when the ungodly get their comeuppance? Are we supposed to be laughing at that? Gladys has got a look on her face like, I don't think so. Do you have a verse to prove it? Proverbs 24, verse 17. Gladys had it right on the tip of her tongue, I'm sure. 24:17. Listen to this verse. It says, rejoice not when thine enemy falleth, and let not thine heart be glad when he stumbleth. Now that's hard to do, isn't it? If we had a political figure that opposed Christianity and they happened to get the coronavirus and they were knocked out of office. You're laughing already. He's already laughing. No. It would be easy to do that. Ha ha, God got them. But we're to keep our heart from that. So what's he saying in Psalm 52? We're laughing. Let me give it to you. Let me give you an illustration this way. If you were about 2 feet away from a coiled cobra and he was getting ready to strike and you knew imminently he was going to strike, could you laugh at that, a coiled cobra getting ready to strike? Yes, you could. If there's a thick sheet of glass between you and, you know, why would you be laughing? Now, that's scary. You ever been, we were at the zoo one time at the gorilla exhibit, and one came up and just smacked the glass and scared us, like, whoa, and we're very happy, like, we're glad we're on the other side of the glass. But why can we laugh at a coiled cobra? Because that glass is going to protect us. Does that make sense? When the wicked is coming after us to devour us, what is the reason we can laugh at that? But we can also laugh. We can. No, we're not to laugh in derision. I don't think it's in derision, though. That's what I'm saying. We have Proverbs 24:17. It says, don't rejoice in your enemy fall. We're not to deride them. We're not to taunt them. We're not to say, you're going to fall. God's going to get you. And then boom, ha-ha, I told you. I don't think God can do that, but we're not to do that. Right. Why can we laugh at a coiled cobra? Because he's behind a glass and we are protected. Okay? So I think in this situation here, when the wicked come after us, when devour us, we can laugh because we're fearing God. And when we fear God, we don't have to be scared of the enemy because they have to come between us. God, they have to come through God to get to us. Does that make sense? So we know that we are protected there. So there is the righteous man described. Let's look at the punishment of the evil man, verses 5 to 7. God shall likewise destroy thee forever. Here's the punishment of the wicked. He shall take thee away and pluck thee out of thy dwelling place and root thee out of the land of the living. So here we have the eternal punishment in verse 5. God shall likewise destroy thee forever. How is that possible? It's eternal punishment in hell. Being destroyed forever without end. It says to take thee away, the idea of being banished from his homeland. Plucked out. Now, one commentator, I'm not sure if I agree with this, but this idea of being plucked out, what he said was, this was the language of plucking burning coals out of a fire, symbolizing that God removes his convicting power from their life in an act of judicial, basically, abandonment. Now, I don't know if that's true or not, but that's an interesting idea there, that this wicked person, God's going to pluck them out. And then it says, rooted out of the land of the living. If you're not in the land of the living, where are you? In the land of the dead, right? So it's an idea saying that they will be killed. Yes? Yes. That is true, yes. That is true, yes. The Edomites were. They did receive that punishment. Now look at the trusting one described. Verse 8, the trusting one. Verse 8. Well, let's read verse 7. Lo, this is the man that made not God his strength. That was Doeg. But trusted in the abundance of his riches and in strengthened himself in his wickedness. There's the description of Doeg there. But verse 8, here is the righteous man, the trusting man. I am like a green olive tree in the house of God. Why? Because I trust in the mercy of God forever and ever. Here's the trusting one described. He is trusting in the mercy of God. Now, there's a thing about faith, right? We walk by faith and not by sight. I want to walk by faith so badly, but I want to know what's going to happen. Are you with me on that? It's like, I know we're trusting the Lord, but how's it going to turn out? That's the part of the faith part. He's trusting in the mercy of God. And then he's a green olive tree. He is thriving, not just barely surviving. You can go to a barren deserts of New Mexico, around the Albuquerque area. Anybody been to Albuquerque, New Mexico? There are not many green lawns out there. Would you? There's rocks in the yard. That's their yard there. And they have cactus, or cacti, if you want to be correct, I guess. And they absorb water, and they hold on to water because they need it desperately, but they're very prickly, right? So they're hoarding the water for their own personal use. David's not a cactus right now. He is an olive tree, a green olive tree. He's thriving. Olive trees produce for others. It sustains other people. It gives in abundance. Let me give you a couple things. Olive trees produce olive oil. It's a healthy, it's beneficial, and it's above the necessity. It's kind of the extra, I think, and if my understanding of that, the dietary structure there. So it's the extra above the necessary. And then olive trees provide comfort. There's hair care products. Remember this? They anointed their head with oil. I never understood that. Like, you want to put oil on your head? Why is that? But we have mousse, we have hairspray, and we have all kinds, you know. So this was their hair care products, anointed with oil. Now, in the midst, now think about this. David flees from Ahimelech. He knows Doeg is on his tail. He knows Doeg is turning him in, as it were. And in the middle of this, David is thriving, not just surviving. That really strikes me. What happened when David fled to the wilderness? He went to Gath and he was kicked out of Gath. He went to the wilderness. What does it say happened to him? Who came to him? A whole band of men started assembling around David. David is really, he's building his future kingdom, really, is what he's doing here. Establishing relationships. He's defending Israel and he's thriving during the worst time. David had other men coming to him for protection. All the trouble David was experiencing, and these other people came to him and says, David, we're facing the same thing. There's a camaraderie there. And David was able to be their leader, their minister, their protector, their provider. all of that. I'm reminded of a verse in the New Testament, 1 Corinthians 10:13 says, "There hath no temptation taken you, but such as is common to man." Never think you're going through a situation where no one has ever gone through before. Because you think, this is unique to me. I've got to give in to this temptation. There's nobody. If anybody else had gone through this temptation, they would have given in just like I need to. You say, no, this is common. Whatever you're thinking, one of the things the devil does, he tempts you into this and then he isolates you. I've heard of people that have been trapped in a sin that they are so embarrassed to even admit and to get help for. And they think, oh, no one will ever understand what I'm going through. This is unique to me. No one's ever gone through this sin before. And that's the devil isolating them. So the idea is we need other people to help us, but also if you're going through a situation, trust God, but then look for other people to help them as well. David was thriving. Let me put it this way. When you're in trouble, trust God and look to help other people. Then look at verse 9, the trusting one's future. Who is this person who trusts the Lord? Look at verse 9. I will praise thee forever, because thou hast done it, and I will wait on thy name. You remember what David did when he fled from Ahimelech? He went to Gath, and he got an audience with the king, and they said, what's this guy? This is the guy that killed Goliath. And David's like, oh no, I'm in trouble. Remember what he did? He started feigning like he was a madman. Now, he was praying, but he was working too. Does that make sense? He was trusting God, but boy, he's doing everything he could. And when he got out of there, guess what he said? God delivered me. He didn't say, I'm smart. I'm a smart guy. He gave God the credit. Here he is. I will praise thee forever because thou hast done it. I love that phrase. And I will wait on thy name, for it is good before thy saints. Constant praise to God. Giving God the glory. Don't take credit for it. And then willing to wait. This word wait comes from a root word that means to bind together, possibly by twisting. You say, what in the world does that mean? I think that means going through trials only binds the believer more closely to God. Would you agree with that? When you've been through a tough time, you're bound to God even closer. David wanted all Israel to know how to act and how to think when evil men were pursuing them. And he wanted them to remember, the wicked man's end is close, and our God is good. What a way to end that. Flourishing in the fire. I'm glad I don't have a Doeg chasing me, aren't you? Oh my. But the Lord took care of that. So, okay, any comments? Yes, yes. Yes, yes. I'd agree with that. Right. Or we may see God's justice went out. So you don't necessarily laugh at their calamities and say, ha ha, you're trying to kill yourself. You've got to go with the heavens coming. But you can still be satisfied with God's justice. And that is what protects us. I would agree. We can be satisfied. That's good. That's a good point. Good. Yes, sir. Kenny.
let's not take out the laugh at him. It is laughable to consider a man.
Right.
Versus God.
Right. That, yeah.
That's just plain right. Stupid.
Right.
With no reason, no sense at all. That's laughable.
Yeah.
You have to laugh at something that dumb.
I think of the Apple Dumpling Gang where Amos and Andy try to rob the guy and they can't throw the rope in the right direction. The gun falls apart. And it's like, those guys can't do anything, you know. I think of that. So, yes, yes, Joel. What's that? Yes. Right.
But on the personal level, Christ himself said, love your enemies, and that's what makes a difference.
Right.
So if I was nearby someone in this administration, I would do whatever I could to serve them and care for them and love my enemies.
Right.
To show a testimony, but at the same time, I'm still laughing in the sense of not at them, but their plans are God can thwart them so easily.
I think one of the things right now is to think you're going to change genders is laughable. That's laughable. And it doesn't take a college degree to figure that. Well, maybe it takes a college degree to get your mind thinking the other way. So, but yeah. 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 Interesting. Interesting thought. Thank you for your input. Okay, would you, Pat, William, I mean, who are you? Wes?